Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Europe in shock as one of football's biggest reputations is left in tatters as banjo-toting Barndoor and cowbum non-botherer Bentner scores actual hat-trick. In other news, Wayne Rooney buries mini Milan and just like in Roman times, it ends badly for Cristiano against Lyon. Pod trains its laser-sharp analytical powers on all the week's Euro action, argues over which goal was better, Robin's or Nasri's, and whether anyone can stop the Premier League sides on the continent. Elsewhere, there's post Robbie Savage in goal and a pulse-quickling preview of what awaits this weekend. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, smiling Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Paolo Bandini.
Hi, James.
Plenty to discuss with you, Paolo. And also Rob Smythe.
Hello.
The extremely commendable and indeed commended Rob Smythe. You were at that awards thing we were hearing on Monday.
I was, yeah.
You got a special commendation.
Well, I did.
Oh, bless.
All for me.
What was that for then, Rob?
A live blog of some description.
Right. Barry got a commendation as well, did he? I imagine.
I think you know full well he did, James.
Right, right. And who actually won then? It was the computer program, wasn't it?
Well, I wish it was in a way. It would have been quite cute, but no, it was the BBC's Tom Fordyce.
Right.
Who's a very good writer indeed.
Oh, so sweet of you to say so after he's just snatched your dream of glory
from.
Yeah. Okay. Barry, not with us today, you'll have spotted, eagle-eared listener, which is a shame because I know he would have wanted to congratulate Lyon, who, far from bottling it at the Bernabeu, to borrow Sid's expression, bottled Real Madrid over the head, didn't they, Sean?
They did. I feel a bit guilty tacking Barry in as he's not here, but he's made several comments this season about the French being surrender monkeys and you can't trust them away from home. Bordeaux topped their group with Bayern Munich and Juventus, winning five and drawing the other one. They've gone away and won in Greece in their first leg, so they should go through. Olympique Lyonnais, you know, again, only lost one game out of six and are now sensationally have knocked out Real Madrid, and deservedly so. They were a bit lucky in the first half, but the second half they had lots of chances and deserved to equalise.
Mm.
So, Barry, if you're listening...
Yeah, cha, as they say. Grandiose, they're the headliner from L'Equipe. If only Paul Dore were here to translate it. Inside, they say that this Lyon team is now among the legends of French football. We'll be hearing from Sid later on, vis-a-vis the you know, the pain in Spain. But you saw the game, Sean.
I did. I watched about 5 minutes of the United game and it was pretty one-sided. And then Lyon, they were lucky in the first half. They went down early to a nice Cristiano Ronaldo goal. Higuain then missed, hit the post and then missed the chance. And but the second half, Lyon were very, very good.
Well, my question is, how far into the legends of French football can they go? Do you think that they're, you know, potential finalists?
I mean, you've got to look how they've done in the league this year, and they haven't been very good. They've been
only 2 points off the top.
Yeah, but this is Lyon that normally, you know, romp to victory. I know they didn't win last year.
Yeah.
But over the two legs, they beat the team that many people thought were going to win the Champions League this year, and they would deservedly win.
They absolutely bossed the first leg as well. I mean, I think I remember being quite surprised at how much everyone seemed to continue to assume Real Madrid were going to win. Because first of all, 1-0 is a very good result to get in your home leg. And secondly, it should have been more than that, actually, in the first leg. They could easily have come away with a 2 or 3 goal advantage. So, you know, why should anyone have assumed that they weren't going to get a result with Madrid?
Why? Yeah, indeed. Well, we'll hear from Sid later on, because even though this is the sixth year... Sorry, was that me chuckling? That they've gone out at this stage. It is still massive news, especially after all that money they spent in the summer. In the meantime, let's talk about the two English teams that were in action this midweek. And it was very much England 9, rest of the world 0. Yeah. Arsenal banging 5 past Porto. And, of course, that game at Old Trafford, Rob, with Man United showing Milan who's boss.
Paradoxically, it was kind of an underwhelming 4-0 win. It was all fairly sedate, partly because they were in control from the first leg. I don't know, really. Contrast when they hammered Roma a few years ago, and that was an incredible performance and kind of a game that will probably live in the memory forever. But I don't think this will at all. It was all very strange, really. Mm. And you can partly attribute that to the Milan having an average age of about 90 and being too...
No,
dreadful.
I'm going to stop you there, Rob Smythe.
And yet...
There was an ageing side on display at Old Trafford.
And it was United Milan.
And they won 4-0, yeah. I mean, let's talk about Gary Neville. 34,
do we have to?
A year and a half out. The man deserves some respect. We all thought he'd retired.
Yeah, well, no, he doesn't. He's still the best crosser at the club, but his defending is diabolical. He was almost humiliated by Matt Jarvis, for heaven's sake, at Wolves on Saturday. He got lucky last night because they couldn't get the ball to Ronaldinho and his positional play was good, but come on, do we really think Gary Neville's back or something because he puts one good cross in?
Two?
He runs around like a 50-year-old. Gary Neville's been a great player and it's really sad that the last few years, a very good player, are going to live in the memory longer than his peak when he was probably as good as any right back apart from Cafu, I would say. But now he's a joke.
Well, there you go.
I think certainly it was a situation that helped Man United. I mean, the injuries that Milan had, I mean, I don't think it would have made a difference. I think United still would have gone through. But I think the injuries Milan had, especially some of them, not even the most obvious one, Antonini, I think you look at the impetus he gives Milan going forward when you've got so many older players in the team. He's one of the few people in that starting 11 normally who actually properly gets up and down the pitch. And he's not the greatest defender in the world, but he does give them something going forward and he supports Ronaldinho, and that's important.
Yeah. And Huntelaar, the new Luther Blissett.
I find Huntelaar's inclusion, this is getting ahead, I guess, maybe in the conversation a little bit, it's almost simultaneously one of the most disappointing things about yesterday. And in some ways, for a reason I'll come on to, maybe it's an encouraging sign, in that there's a sense in Italy, and there's been some back and forth about whether or not this is true. Certainly Berlusconi's tried to deny it, but there's some sense in Italy that maybe Berlusconi intervened ahead of the Roma game last week and said, put Huntelaar in your starting lineup. And the only positive I would draw from that is I think the thing Milan most need right now is Berlusconi to care enough to get involved, because that is a team that needs a significant amount of work to compete at the levels it used to in Europe.
Well, bad news on that front is that apparently Berlusconi switched off straight after halftime when the second goal went in. He said, any Milan fans here, because he was having a business meeting.
And what do you mean business meeting? Is it a business meeting or a business meeting with quotes around it?
Well, whatever. He found the attendant company more entertaining than the match.
I bet he
decided
to
devote his interest to them. And
which actually, I think, is quite almost a reflection of what the team did. Which is, I think the team, and I think this is a very it's something that I've seen Serie A teams do before in Europe. I was talking to Rob just before we started about when Inter, having beaten the Arsenal 3-0 at Highbury, then in the return game in the group stage, played out a very competitive sort of 60-70 minutes against Arsenal. We're losing 2-1. Then, you know, once the third one went in, completely stopped playing. And I think Milan did the same thing. They got to a point where they realised this is not going to happen. They just stopped playing. And it was really, you know, disappointing.
I think it would be churlish not to mention Wayne Rooney. I know we've done so a lot recently, but I think he only saw the highlights because I watched the Real Lyon game. But he was very, very good. And the way he's played this last few months reminds me a lot of Van Nistelrooy in 2002-03, in the sense that he's dragging which really is a fairly ordinary Manchester United team up above into the peaks by the force of his will. And I think he has been superb over the last few months.
His goal-scoring rate is extraordinary, and we've seen how that's developed year on year. But Rob, possibly the highlights flattered Rooney's performance.
I don't think he played well at all. I thought two good finishes. The header was a beautiful header, but he actually gave the ball away a lot. Which, in a strange way, you know, he's had quite a few bad games this year. At times he's been exceptional. Other times he's played okay and still scored one or two like last night. And there was a spell around Christmas when he could do nothing right. As a footballer, I've seen him play better. But of course, he's now playing as a number nine. And as Sean said, he's dragging them over to win games just with the force of his will and with some really good finishing, actually. Mm. I know there was a kind of a doubt in the past as to how good a finisher he was. Paul Doyle thought he was a poor finisher.
It's so, rare from Paul, isn't it, to undersell something to do with United. But at the end of the day, he scored the goals that take you through.
Yeah, Sean's right. It's fundamentally a pretty ordinary side. And we saw that for big parts of this game, really. Milan, let's be honest, could have had five in the first leg.
Yeah, but if they'd had better finishes, etc., of Huntelaar, this, that and the other.
Yeah, but again, to go back, just to contrast with that Roma game, that was a spectacular demolition. And I've seen United play much better in big European games than they did over this leg, over this tie, rather.
Right. Well, Sean, you're waving some tweets.
Yeah, I've had a couple of tweets for you. First from Andy Bradshaw that asks, is AC Jimbo on suicide watch after last night's defeat? And Thomas Kelly wants Paolo and you to know, whether last night's defeat will mean a breakup of a tired old Milan squad. Over half could retire. Will Pato leave?
I think we've touched on it already. I mean, it all depends on Berlusconi. It always all depends on Berlusconi, because his is the money that will determine whether or not more things can be done. And if there isn't more money to be spent, then they'll presumably try and potter on for another season what they've got. And you've got to bear in mind that from you know, his point of view, for all that this wasn't the greatest result, they are still doing all right in the league. They're competitive in Serie A, which they haven't been for a couple of seasons, really. So there's a lot of reasons. And I do also think, you know, for all that it was miserable last night, it was abject performance, but I do think you have to remember that it hasn't been all down this season, given especially how badly the preseason went. They did win in Madrid, and I know Madrid have now come up short as well, which maybe says some more about the fact that despite all our pessimism over here in England sometimes, maybe the English league is just still further ahead than people.
Well, like I say, England 9, rest the world 0. And is there a team out there that you see seriously challenging the Premier League sides this year?
Just Barcelona, isn't it? It's Barcelona against England now, I think.
I'd love to see
Inter, no chance still? Nobody thinks?
I personally, and I hope they don't, but I think Inter will get absolutely thrashed next week. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 4-0 again.
I'd love to see one of the English teams play Bordeaux this season, because I think Bordeaux have been very impressive
that
in their games.
Yeah, that would be a really interesting game. But do they really have enough to go through over two legs?
Lyon-Bordeaux final, do you think, Sean?
One for the purists.
Yeah.
Or the French. We should talk a bit about Arsenal.
Well, we're going to. Let's talk about Arsenal then. I'll just mention the Gazetta's headline. Once upon a time, there was a Milan. That was their front page today. Very sad and elegiac. Leonardo got everything wrong, they say, underneath. They were inferior in their heads, in their legs, and in their formation. There you go. I have to say, this question about Suicide Watch, though, because when I came in this morning, you said, oh, Jimbo's the death of Italian football. I don't know why you were impersonating a Newcastle fan, but anyway, you were. And I said, well, what's the surprise? We sat here on Monday saying that Milan were going to get taken apart. So,
can I just make one last point on the game? We often think of Ferguson as being little more than in possession of a chequebook and a hairdryer, but his his decision to put Park on Pirlo in both legs was inspired, hugely successful, both in a defensive and attacking sense. And Ferguson, actually, we looked at this last year, he comes up with a new plan for every European tie. He's a real tinker man. He's probably the biggest tinker man in the division. Sometimes it can be exasperating, but he got it spot on. And he's always loved Pirlo. He bought Carrick, I think, to be kind of a Pirlo light figure. So full credit to him for that.
Meantime, at the Emirates on Tuesday, Arsenal made a decent Porto side look very ordinary indeed. It's funny to think some people were worried about the Gunners.
Yeah, well, I should scoff a huge helping of humble pie, because I thought Arsenal might struggle. I was at the game. I thought they were very, very good indeed, particularly Nasri, Rosicki and Song. And Nasri's goal was sensational. I would say that there were a few nervy moments, particularly in defence. I had lots of Arsenal fans around me going, Sol, Sol, every time the ball went near him, like it was an incontinent granddad that you love very much.
It was like a giant creaking wardrobe, just sort of tilting from side to side in the area and staggering in one direction and the next. But the conversation I still had with my brother behind the goal was that, God, but wouldn't you rather have him than Mikhail Silvestre? Which, you know, says something about, you know, the state of Arsenal's defence after Gallas and Vermaelen, who I think, you know, still is a pretty solid partnership. They were very creaky at the back. I thought Nasri was wonderful. I think he was wonderful at the weekend again. I think there's maybe a question now of, which is a slightly tricky one to address, which is that he does seem to be giving, well, certainly is one of his best performances of the season in, I guess, the Fabregas role. And obviously that's Fabregas' job, and he maybe hasn't...
Until the summer it is.
And he maybe hasn't been quite as much success on the wings. I mean, he's been fine on the wings, but I think that maybe it's just showing that his best job might be one that can't be accommodated as long as Fabregas is in the team.
Surely you can play both. Song, Fabregas, Nasri, two wide, and one up front.
That's a very attacking lineup. Really? I mean, you're relying on Song to do all the...
You have Danielson in that role, and if you think who Arsenal have to play...
I'd say this, Nasri can hold, and Wenger's had him do that before, but I think that in that formation you'd have to again ask Nasri to sit back deeper, and I think that limits what he gives you going forwards.
That goal, was it better than the Arwen Robin one?
I enjoyed it more, but that has something to do with my Serie A and Arsenal leanings. It was a great goal. I think they're both great goals, but I don't think you necessarily have to pick one over the other, do you?
You're right, actually, pal.
Let's just love them both.
Yeah. Love them both equally. Yes. Nicholas Bentner, hat trick.
Don't look at me. I've always supported Bentner. I've always thought he's a very good player.
I was, you know, indulging in some gentle ribbing of the Dane on Monday. I have to say, I don't change my mind at all. Hard to see a simpler hat trick than this. Two easy tap ins, courtesy of great build up work from Arshavin, and then a penalty.
I don't think the first one was easy. I mean, he had two defenders.
He was.
I think that was... I wouldn't go.
Which one was it? Was the first one the one where he was pretty much offside, but Arshavin
no,
was...
No, no, that was easy. I'm talking about the one... The first one was when the ball broke to him and he has two defenders sort of jumping in front of him and he has to sort of slide into it and he's trying to get his toe there first. I mean, I don't think that's an easy chance. I mean, I'm not saying it's the world's hardest either, but it's not... I don't think that's...
Oh, yeah, that one.
I think he had.
Well, he got lucky on the first one then. And but anyway, great news for Arsene Wenger. And we should talk about Eboué as well. Lots of posters with love and big love for Eboué. Chelsea Green, the most positive team player in the country. Eboué asked Technica, is anything he can't do? He G's up his teammates from the sidelines, plays as right back, right midfield, left midfield, takes corners, scores goals, earns fouls from the other team, celebrates with the warming up subs. Wins the penalty, everything.
He's got a new habit as well, Eboué, at the home games. Anyway, after every game, when everyone else has walked off the pitch, he always seems to climb into the stands and give his shirt to someone,
He's clearly a lovely chap. Wonk saying, Emmanuel Eboué, team player, motivator, big cat impersonator. Is there nothing the man can't do? He goes back to explain the context of the big cat business. Team party, Eboué decided to come dressed as a tiger, hide behind the door, and roar at everyone who came in. Crucially, it wasn't a fancy dress party. So anyway, another big game performance on Tuesday, if you will. And Arsene now says he fancies meeting Chelsea or United in the next round.
Did he strictly say that, or was it a bit of a tabloid spin?
Oh, really?
I don't know for certain, but I read somewhere that said something like, it wasn't a kind of come on, bring them on kind of thing. It was
bring
just
them
a kind
on.
Of, yeah, come on, let's have it. But it's not interesting, I think, that normally you judge teams more over a league performance. But this year, really, Arsenal might be judged on the cup, because they could and probably will win the league, become the first side to do so. Become the first side to do so despite losing all four games to second and third. That's never happened before. So really, in terms of judging them, it's going to be when they get a good side in Europe, Chelsea, United or Barcelona, which is kind of a reversal of the way things normally are. I think I'd be astonished if they don't win the league now.
Why, Rob?
But just look at the run-ins. It's much, much easier. Wenger's teams, when they get momentum, they have this kind of siege mentality, which they seem to have after the Ramsey business. I'd be astonished.
So do you think that they, to borrow the expression, turned a corner now? Do you think it would be different if they drew Man United or Chelsea in the Champions League?
Oh, no, I think they'd get stuffed. But I don't think it matters. I think they'll win. And that's why I think the Cup is more interesting in terms of... I mean, does it matter if you win the league and lose all four games to Chelsea United? I don't know. But it's kind of interesting, because normally you think the league is how you judge the worth and progress of a team, and I'm not sure it is with Arsenal.
I tend to agree that I find it hard to see them being either United or Chelsea over two legs, just going on the evidence of what's happened this season. I'd love to share Rob's belief that they're going to romp to the league title, but I think they've got games left on that running that they're very capable of dropping points in.
Right, well, they currently lie third, level with Chelsea. Chelsea have a game in hand. Man United are 2 points clear of the pair of them. This weekend, Man United hosting Fulham. Chelsea are host West Ham, and Arsenal are at Hull, which is not an easy game. Isn't no, it's not, Rob. You can smirk and...
Can we just, talking of Hull, can we refer to Phil Brown's interview in Zoo magazine? He was asked, apparently, if he had any regrets, and he said, I don't drink pints of hindsight, I drink pints of Guinness.
Yeah. With that in mind, let's move on to part two, in which we will hear from Dr. Sid with a bumper edition of News from Madrid.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Right, I hear a international connection in the background. It must be Sid Lowe in Madrid, here to tell us all about the big, big European story, Real Madrid's exit. Sid, here we go again.
Yeah, and I think that's really why this is so big. And obviously, it would be a very big story anyway, Real Madrid going out to Olympic Lyon, having spent the money that they spent in the summer, €258 million, with the return of Florentino Perez as president. It would be big anyway. But it's the fact that this is 6 years running now, and that suggests all sorts of slightly deeper problems than simply not playing well against Olympic Lyon, although... You know, the reality is that in the short term, at least, that's what happened. They had a performance which I thought was desperately poor in the second half. They probably should have put the game out of sight in the first, but then in the end, they really didn't deserve anything. And I've just arrived at Atocha Station in Madrid, and I think there's a little bit of evidence that bad news sells as well, because I went to the first newspaper kiosk, and they'd sold out every single copy of the two main sports dailies in Madrid. So I had to dash around and find another one. And they're going absolutely crazy, as you can imagine. The front cover of Marca, which is no surprise because they've had it in for Pellegrini from the very start, is basically shouting out on the cover. And AS describes it as a catastrophe.
Out as in Pellegrini should get out, or rather than Real Madrid being out?
No, Alta's in Pellegrini should get out. The headline on their website last night immediately after the game was basically Adios Champions League, Adios Pellegrini. This morning it's a huge fuera on the front cover with a picture of Pellegrini. And in a way, it's weird this, because I was going to say to you, you know, and today obviously is the day when the search for the scapegoat starts. But actually, in truth, the scapegoating has been going on from the very, very start of the season. And it's been happening all the way through this campaign, even when Real Madrid have been playing well. And there's no surprise for anyone if I tell you that this morning the people who are taking all the hits are Gonzalo Higuain, who hit the post with pretty much an open goal, and Manuel Pellegrini, because they've taken some of the hits all season, although Higuain has started to win people around. And the other person that people are desperately disappointed with, and this is politically a more difficult situation, because it's very, very easy politically to go for Pellegrini and to go for Gonzalo Higuain, because of the fact that essentially they're not the protected men of Florentino Perez. Politically more difficult is the fact that they're all going for Kaká, but then of course the reality is screaming in the Kaká has been absolutely awful for the most part since he joined Real Madrid. Now, I should try and be a little fair on Kaká, which is maybe he hasn't been awful in the sense that he hasn't been an absolutely desperately bad footballer, but when you spend more money on him than any player in the world apart from Cristiano Ronaldo, and when he comes as a former European Footballer of the Year, and when he comes as a big star, and he's this bad, then I think people are entitled to be pretty pissed off with him.
Sid, I notice Kaká's agent's been on the attack this morning, though. He's accused Pellegrini's decision, or substitutions rather, as being cowardly, which is obviously a reference, I think, to taking off Kaká.
Yeah, and I think that is the beginnings of I think over the next two or three days, we may see one or two snidey comments come out. This was on Kaká's press guy's Twitter account, basically, yesterday during the game. Yeah, he described him as cowardly. He accused Pellegrini of deliberately pointing the finger at a player by taking Kaká off. Now, I think there's a little bit of paranoia whenever people say that about managers taking off players. Oh, well, you're pointing the finger at him. Well, yeah, maybe you are, but if he's not playing well, what's a manager supposed to do? Keep him on the pitch just in case he worries about upsetting him because he's taking him off when he's not playing well and the manager's trying to find a solution. It is also true that when you look at what Pellegrini did yesterday in terms of his changes, I think most of us were looking at each other and thinking, my God, he's just signed his own death warrant, sent on Mahamadou Diarra, sent on Raul. But then you look at the list of the subs, and it's weird this, because all year we've been looking at Madrid and saying, yeah, they've got a very strong squad. Actually, the players he had available to him on the bench last night were not particularly strong. And I think that we saw the significance to Real Madrid of Xavi Alonso, who was suspended, and also, and I know this is not a particularly popular thing to say, and also the significance of Marcelo.
They've all chosen Pellegrini then as the scapegoat. Who do you think is responsible for possibly the biggest blow to Florentino Perez, given that this was supposed to be their Champions League? The final's going to be there at the Bernabeu. It was their tournament of destiny, no?
Yeah, well, there was a comment I saw yesterday which I really did love, and in a one small comment it says so much about the political divisions and so much about the scapegoating. And the comment was, this is all Ramon Calderon's fault, because if Ramon Calderon hadn't bloody well asked to have the Champions League final at the Bernabeu, Florentino Perez, Real Madrid, wouldn't be suffering this ignominy, they wouldn't be suffering so much, because they wouldn't be, you know, missing out on their own final. Now, there are lots of people to point the finger at. I think the first one is that there were one or two gaps in the squad when they built the squad in the summer. But I also think it is true they built an extremely impressive squad. I do think, given the resources at his disposal, that there are certain things that Manuel Pellegrini has got very, very wrong. I think that political decisions have sometimes been skewed in footballing terms. For example, the decision to get rid of both Iron Robin and Wesley Snyder, and they would have got rid of Rafa van der Vaart too if it hadn't been for the fact that his wife suffered breast cancer in the summer and he refused to move. I think that was a poor decision in footballing terms, but of course they're not this president's men. I think the undermining to some extent of Gonzalo Higuain has perhaps been problematic. So I think there's problems there in terms of the institutional setup of the club. I also think that when you look at it last night, one of the things that was so striking, and Pellegrini talked about this in the press conference after the game, was that Madrid played like a bunch of individuals rather than a team. Now, first things first, obviously, to some extent, that's Pellegrini's fault. But it also poses questions about the nature of the players that they've got. And we come back to the obvious one, of course, which is Cristiano Ronaldo, who on occasions this year has been unbelievably brilliant. But of course, as we all know, and it's nothing new, the unbelievably brilliant is so often about himself and not about others. And it does seem to be a little bit of kind of festering, I wouldn't say discontent, but a sort of a slight sense of maybe people not being entirely happy with each other in that sense. And someone put this to me in really quite a nice way a while ago. With Cristiano Ronaldo, it's almost like playing with a big kid in the park. You don't actually enjoy playing with him very much, but you know with him and your team, you've got a better chance of winning. Trouble is, when you get to the European Champions League, it's slightly different. And that's the other issue, by the way, in all of this. Real Madrid and Barcelona are absolutely walking the Spanish league, yet Real Madrid have been knocked out 6 years in a row, first knockout stage of the Champions League. They're not a big club in European terms anymore, and yet they're along with Barcelona, walking the Spanish league. Big question, I think, about the standard of Spanish football.
Sid, has there been much talk yet about who will replace Pellegrini? I mean, the obvious two candidates, I guess, are Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho, or Jose Mourinho, even.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, there has, in a sense, that those are names that are in the air, rather than that this is something that people are sitting down and saying, right, this is what we should do. And I think this should be put into context, which is that bear in mind that Manuel Pellegrini was never Florentino Perez's choice as coach. And in that sense, he arrived already sacked. He arrived already as an expendable part of the club, as I've pointed out to you before. Florentino Perez desperately wanted Arsene Wenger, and they spoke to Wenger. I think in total they've spoken to Wenger a good three or four times now. Arsene Wenger wasn't convinced by the project for all the reasons that we know, because Wenger himself likes to control certain things, doesn't want the club to go down certain routes, which Real Madrid would almost certainly go down. Then they talked about Jose Mourinho, although I get the feeling in truth that Mourinho ever slightly used Real Madrid to manoeuvre himself into a stronger position for a contract renewal with Inter Milan. Rafa Benitez would be an obvious choice in many ways. He's brought up at Real Madrid, from Madrid, you know, coached at the club with Vicente del Bosque many years ago. If Rafa Benitez has had problems with Valencia, which he has done, he's had problems with Liverpool, which he has done, you think there's almost no chance that he could go to Real Madrid and not have problems with them as well.
Yeah, except they don't have to play Wigan as often as, say, Liverpool do.
Well, there's actually a question mark there, and as I said earlier about the standard of the league, if Real Madrid had to play teams like Wigan, would it be harder than playing teams like Racing Santander or Getafe? It's very, very difficult to judge that, of course. In fact, it's pretty much impossible to judge that with any certainty, but that is a question that is starting to be asked.
There you go, in Wigan and in Madrid, probably. Sid, that's been fantastic. As you make your way through the ghost town that is no doubt Madrid this morning, best of luck. We look forward to hearing your reaction to all the weekend's activities on Monday.
Speak to them.
Dr. Sid there in Madrid. Now, the other Champions League game, of course, saw Fiorentina exit the competition despite a fine performance at home to Bayern Munich. A 3-2 win for the Viola, but they went out on away goals because Bayern had that ridiculous offside goal validated by Ovrebe in the first.
I mean, I think, upsetting as it is, we're probably at the point we just have to let that go now. I mean, it's what they want you to do.
Apparently.
But I mean, obviously, you can understand a lot of the players came out afterwards and said, you know, we are very bitter about this result because of that. And the coach Prandelli said it as well. What's sad about it, Fiorentina, is Fiorentina actually, you know, if you've been watching Serie A, you know that they've had so many big decisions go against them this season. It's happened against Juventus, it's happened against Milan, it's happened in all of their big games this season. Something seems to go against them. And now they're really struggling. I mean, they haven't had a great year. They're down in 11th. And they're not going to be back in the Champions League next season. And the shame of that is that, you know, were Inter to go out to Chelsea, then I would probably have to look at it and say, well, on the strength of those three teams, Fiorentina were the best of Italy's representatives in Europe. They were one of the highest scoring teams, I think, in the Champions League up to this stage. And they basically, they, you know, they've only been, you know, they've only been actually beaten by Lyon and Bayern Munich. And you know, they've emerged on top of Lyon, and maybe should have emerged on top of Bayern Munich. And I think it's unfortunate as well, because now the talk in Italy is that Juventus are lining up Prandelli. They've apparently already spoken to him and on the quiet, and he could be the next Juventus manager at the end of the season. And it feels a bit like that project is about to go awry. And
it does feel like it's come to the end. One of the biggest pities is that lovely purple puffer coat.
So cool.
He won't be able to wear that if he goes to Turin.
As a fashion man like yourself as well, Jim, that must break
that
your
hurts.
Heart.
That hurts bad.
Is that a Uniqlo jumper you're wearing?
Now, coefficient news, because, of course, this is very much the big topic here, especially when the Italians play the Germans. This result actually helped the Italians' coefficient margin over the Germans.
Well, on the assumption that Bayern go on to lose their next two games.
Yeah.
which is no good.
It's quite possible.
It's possible. I think Bayern looked, you know, showed a lot of frailties in those games. I think if they draw a lot of the bigger teams, you would certainly not expect them to go through.
Mm.
You never know. You've got Ruben and Robin in the team.
If you're just joining us anyway, for whatever reason, in terms of the season, because it's something we discussed before, there's a kind of rolling 5-year sample of your European results. And unfortunately, the results from 3 or 4 years ago for Italy well, unfortunately from Italy's point of view, weren't very good compared to the Bundesliga, as a result of which the Bundesliga is fast catching up. Now, next year, Italy will definitely have four teams in the Champions League and the Bundesliga will have three, because that's already sorted out. The year after that, 2012-13, is the one that they're currently battling over. But the year after that, thanks to the results from 3 years ago, is pretty much done and dusted, that Serie A will be down to three teams. So before we lose Sean Ingle, Reading 4-1 Derby, Robbie Savage 50 minutes in goal. Discuss.
Well, you're supposed to aim for the bottom corner, but I'd imagine they were aiming for his face last night. But he did quite well, apparently.
Yeah.
I saw one spectacular save. Yeah. I quite like Savage. I like Barry said in his blog on Monday. He's quite self-deprecating and he seems all right.
Yeah, he's a charming bloke.
Was it okay that the goalkeeper, the first one, went off injured and the second one was sent off?
That's right. And Nigel Clough says that he wanted to give Robbie a bit of a rest before the game on the weekend.
Oh, that was the reason.
So he thought that was the best place to put him. So he'd stand around between the posts. Ethical strategy leaps to John Terry's defence. The shirtless interview. Because he said the reason he did the interview shirtless wasn't that he just wanted to show off his pecs, but he'd gone into the crowd and given his shirt to a young fan, and then he was collared by a TV crew.
Well, so two things about that. Does he always give his shirt to a young fan, or was he trying to
I think he probably does throw his shirt into the crowd a lot.
Well, I've never seen him interviewed topless before, and he's often interviewed after games. More to the point, if you're going to take your top off, take the armband off so you don't look like an ostentatious fool. It's not difficult.
Right, okay.
How did he take the shirt off without taking off the armband?
Well, it's
As if he had it all pre-planned.
Coltrane 27 says Matthew Upson should call his son Chin. Totally Totty says Bakary Sanya should call his son Les. Yeah. And Wonk says Emmanuel Abue should call his next-born Peak. I like that. Yeah, dear. Nice. Now, there's a busy weekend of Premier League football. We're going to be looking at that and reviewing one or two of the midweek league games right after this. Well, on to the weekend's games then. On Saturday, Birmingham are taking on in-form Everton. Everton actually is second in the form table based on the last eight games.
And playing some real swashbuckling stuff as well. It's not with Arteta back. Yeah, just so much to admire about that team. We need the fact that during the kind of bad times in the winter, Moyes didn't complain like other managers. Just a really admirable team, I think.
With all of that, Birmingham is still 2 points above them in the table. So,
Isn't Donovan gone for Everton now?
I believe he might be, yes.
Yeah, which I think he's been a very important player for them. I think he's been a good player in that run.
Mm. Interesting to see how they'll survive without him. Bolton and Wigan, both of whom are reasonably... They've got a bit of breathing space down there at the bottom. Burnley, though, very much in the bottom three, will be taking on the team immediately above them, Wolves. Up at the other end, meanwhile, Chelsea are hosting West Ham. Gianfranco Zola making what could well prove an unhappy return to Stamford Bridge.
They have, if memory serves me, I might be completely wrong here, but I think Chelsea have only scored three goals in the last three games against West Ham at the Lane, but I think they've won two out of three of them.
I don't know, West Ham
have been quite good at keeping it tight.
West Ham have got a draw there last season, but you would fancy Chelsea. Losing at home, they lose at home once a season normally, not twice in as many games.
Hull, meanwhile, are hosting Arsenal, that match which you were sniggering about earlier, Rob.
Arsenal put teams like that to sleep easily. I think they'll stuff them, personally.
Really? Teams like that in what sense?
The league splits into three sections, I would say. Yeah. The top three to about four to about nine who are quite good, and the rest who are rubbish. And Arsenal generally thrash the rubbish. And I think they'll thrash Hull on Saturday.
All right. Okay, Stoke meanwhile will be hosting Aston Villa. Spurs, who are currently in possession of that coveted fourth spot, are at home to Blackburn, which... logic would suggest would be a reasonably straightforward match, would it?
I think Spurs have got a very good record against Blackburn at Lane in recent years, although there was a time not so long ago where Blackburn used to go there and quite regularly win in the Premier League. I think they've won five times there in the last 15 or so years.
Blackburn have been a better team than they are now as well, though.
And they're useless away. I think Spurs will...
Where's the surprise coming this weekend, then, do you think? You see any potential fixtures? Is it Man United home to Fulham on Sunday? Fulham, who, of course... really? Pulled a shock on them at Craven Cottage?
Yeah, 3-0 and could have been more. I mean, I kind of tend to expect Man United to lose every game they play, but I wouldn't be entirely surprised if that was a draw.
I think
I would be, because United have won the last five games against Fulham at Old Trafford. I think they scored 15 goals to Fulham's three. Fulham will be having come back from a trip to Turin on Thursday
snowbound
night.
Snowbound Turin, so there could well be complications getting back
from
Turin.
And I think I'd be very, very surprised if Fulham get something like that.
Sean may have his Premier League betting companion out Fulham. In front of him. I just wanted to say, because... Of course, Fulham playing Juventus, which is happening right after this podcast, so it's hard for us to talk about it because it's probably going to be over by the time people listen. But Fulham have got the Europa League to concentrate on now, and I've also was told by a Fulham supporting friend the other day, so I haven't checked this, but that they're in pole position to get a fair play Europa League spot for next season. And if they've got that, then there really is nothing for them to worry about in the league. You know, they've got cups to worry about, and they've just got to make sure, well, they've already basically done enough to make sure they're going to stay up, so there's nothing else for them to fret about this season.
Interesting. Sunderland, meanwhile, who finally ended that extraordinary winless streak. What was it? No victory since November? And then a whomping, thraking, in fact.
A whomping thraking?
4-0 over Bolton, that's right, yeah. It's many days ago now. A lot of football under the bridge, as it were, since then. And, you know, a major turnaround. Darren Bent with a hat-trick.
That's what you get if you go off Twitter, you see. He deleted his Twitter account to concentrate on football.
Have you started scoring more since you gave up Twitter, Jim?
Certainly have, Sean, certainly have. They're hosting Man City. Prediction? Not sure who would be the favourite in those circumstances.
No, it's hard to know whether that was just a one-off for Sunderland. I mean, Sunderland playing as they were earlier in the season were a formidable side at home, and you would fancy them maybe to win that game, but I just don't know. Without seeing the game, I don't know whether there was kind of a sense that any fluidity was back or anything, or whether it was just...
Yeah, they put some nice moves together. Man City, though, away at the Stadium of Light. What do you reckon on that?
Well, Man City should be the team we're all looking at now and going, yeah, they're going to take fourth. They should be the team in pole position, even though they're not in that position, but because I think they've got the games in hand on Tottenham.
Well, they've got a game in hand on Tottenham, and two on Liverpool, who are in sixth place.
But you just don't believe it, do you? You don't believe it, and especially not away from home.
Sean talked about Rooney earlier, and Tevez, I would say, is equally important. City looked pretty ordinary in midfield. Even at Chelsea, they didn't do much. Tevez was sensational. Right. So I guess a lot depends on him, really. Yeah. Was there anything in this Gerrard thing? I haven't seen it.
The flicking of Vs? Well, yeah, he does seem to have flicked a V at the referee, which is...
The argument is that he was signalling, I've been fouled twice.
Well, lip readers would suggest that he had an entirely different message for the referee. And I think if you go up to a referee after he's just shown you a card and flick two fingers with your palm facing away from him, it's pretty clear what you're talking about.
As much as I'd like to see Steven Gerrard get a three-match ban, there is a more serious point here. If who's a referee, Andre Mariner, if he says he saw it and did nothing, how can you have a respect campaign if you have no self-respect? Is it all right for just someone to flick Vs and tell him to F off then? I mean, I don't really understand how that works. Tell me, James, how does that work?
Respect, Rob. Sometimes the greatest respect of all is not taking offence when someone's emotion takes the better of them, because it's all about them, not about you. Sometimes the person that is really being insulted by an offensive gesture is the person who makes it.
That's an important life lesson.
And on that note, we'll conclude today's Football Weekly Extra. And all that. Many thanks, Sean. You've got to go to a boxing lesson, haven't you?
Might have to.
Yeah, go on. And to you, Paolo Bandini.
Thanks.
And Rob Smythe. Terrific input from you all. Thanks very much, guest producer Ian. We'll be back with you on Monday. So hopefully you'll be joining us then. In the meantime, have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.